All right. Did anybody else have anything on the criminal recommendations, understanding that these are for state district courts?
I do.
Okay.
Just in re-looking at this and now having a better understanding that there's separate standards that apply to the limited jurisdiction courts. On Exhibit B for criminal cases, for sentencing, it does say presumptively in person with a virtual option for defendants already in custody. So I just see that as a potential area of issue if someone potentially receiving a prison sentence, if a judge decides they want to do that virtually, I think that that could be problematic. It's just a little unclear in the language whether that means it's an option that the defendant can elect for some reason, or the parties could stipulate to, or whether it's something that the court could decide that they want to start doing.
I'm sorry. So, sentencing hearings presumptively in person, and what was the point you were making that?
Under exceptions comments, it says virtual option for family and victims or for defendants already in custody.
I think that might be a jail issue
Yeah.
because oftentimes, at least, and I'm speaking for the South again in our heavier courts, oftentimes, if there's an issue with transportation of in, especially like during COVID, we did a lot of virtual hearings from the jail, and we have a
Right.
setup with the jail where they can appear virtually, and we often have hearings like that. So I think that's why that may have been included in there.
Yeah, the theory of that was presumptively in person, because I think we were all in an agreement on our subcommittee that we want the defendant to have the opportunity to be in court with his attorney, his or her attorney, and the judge, right? And participate in that. But if they're in custody at the detention center and they just want to appear virtually, that's fine as well. And then there was also the option, the other exception there was if you have a sentencing hearing where there's been a stipulation to probation or it's mandatory probation, then defendants that are, for instance, out of the jurisdiction can appear virtually.
Justice Herndon, I think part of that discussion was also for clients who are already in prison and it's being remanded for a
Right.
clarification of sentence,
We don't need to
or
transport them back and forth.
so they're not losing their housing and being transported unnecessarily, basically, but it was at the defendant's option.
Does that make sense, Evie?
It does. I just think that the language should reflect that a little more clearly because I don't think that it's obvious from the way it's worded that
Okay.
that's the intent.
Just a certain, this is Darren Emily. I think that's one of the off ramps that Christopher is talking about. I think stipulations by counsel should carry a lot of weight with regard, because that would resolve some of those issues for the limited jurisdictions as well. If the defense attorney and the DA agree to stipulate to appear virtually, I mean, that should be almost a no-brainer. If we have a conditional plea that's coming out of a settlement conference and we've agreed, that should again be something that can almost always be virtual, because the times that the judge is going to want to see the people in person is going to be 1% as opposed to higher. So I think those stipulations between counsel should be one of the big off ramps for almost every exception that we have or presumption that we have.
Well, it's just a little difficult, right? Because you never know exactly what's in our head in
Right.
terms of what we want to do on a particular case, right? So it's obviously the rare circumstance where, let's say, you all stipulate to a 12 to 30 prison sentence, and Judge Jones looks at the case and says, "You know what? I kind of think this needs a shot at probation. This is shouldn't go to prison right now." I'm guessing that she would prefer to sentence that person in person to be able to have a conversation about, look, I know that the idea was you to do a 12 to 30 month prison sentence, but I'm going to go against that and put you on probation. And let me tell you what my expectations are going to be versus doing that virtually. So I get that, yes, there should be great credence given to the attorney stipulate to do something virtually, and here's the reasons for it. And 90% of the time, the judges should be, that's fine, right? but I don't want it to be something where we kind of say, well, if there's a stipulation, then that's just always going to rule the day on that, because the judges may have different ideas about, you know, what they're going to do with a particular case, that they can't really say, hey guys, I know you stipulated, but I can't do that because let me tell you what I'm going to do.
Or a defendant who wants to appear virtually, but everybody else on the calendar is coming over in person. There's not a corrections officer who can just take them up to a special classroom all by themselves to accommodate their request to appear virtually. They're coming over, you know, it's just logistics.
No, and I was referring more to the out of custody situation. Right. Than in custody, because in custody, the transport's easy.
Well, and I think that from the standpoint of our presumptively in-person stuff on the criminal side of things, setting aside that we've carved out for sentencing that there are exceptions to that to allow for virtual stuff, pretty much everything we've recommended in person is the kind of stuff that the attorney and the client need to be in court together with the judge to do evidentiary hearings, to address probation revocation issues, to address even status checks where there's notice of a compliance issue, right? Those things are just going to get done more efficiently if people are in person 99% of the time, again, unless there's the good cause to maybe make a change with something. And I referenced Judge Jones a minute ago, Jamie, because Tiara joined us. So
I've got her.
Thank you. All right. We have an even bigger quorum now. Terrific. Okay. Anybody else on the criminal part of things? No? All right. So let's flip over to the civil presumptions, understanding first that we need to take out of there the things that dealt with. I think there was some stuff in the civil recommendations that also dealt with family court. I'm not sure how. I'm not blaming Perigary for that. I think it came under Justice Hardesty last year. But yeah, we had entry of plea, probation revocation, bail hearing, sentencing, termination of parental rights, guardianship. All those things would seem to be things that were more appropriate in the other side. So we need to, or some of the other subcommittees. So we need to clean those up. Do you know, Tara, why those things were included last year in the civil recommendations?
Justice Herman, I think what happened was the entirety of the process, that chart, was just incorporated for commentary, and I don't think it was intentional. I think it was okay. More or less just we didn't break it apart. Not that civil should have, I don't believe that civil should have an influence on what the rules are as to criminal or the presumptions are as to criminal, nor family. So I'm comfortable speaking on behalf of the subcommittee saying we really were more focused on civil, but we're throwing in our two cents. Since a lot of us, I think, also have an overlap, and right. Certainly for Judge Hill, she hears all of them, so that was appropriate for her to weigh in on, okay. Because they don't have the assignments the same as we do down in the eighth, where we have just civil, just criminal, and then hybrid.
Okay. All right. There were, let's see here. I think three categories in civil where you all had some kind of both boxes checked, basically, like settlement conferences. There was maybe the presumption for the parties, but maybe insurance adjusters virtually, and case by case judicial discretion. And then in status conferences, trial readiness, there was both boxes checked with locals could choose to be in person, but the default should be presumed virtual. And then dispositive motion hearings, case by case, attorneys can choose. My sense is we need to kind of do one or the other in terms of the recommendation as to it needs to be presumptively virtual or presumptively in person. Understanding, again, this whole concept that we're talking about with off ramps and the ability of the court and counsel to have conversations about flipping it from one thing to another. But I don't think, for instance, like dispositive motions, that it should just be a, hey, attorneys can choose. I think we should, settle on one that's going to be the presumption, and then understand moving forward that it may be in a particular case that they do it the other way.
And I have a question, Justice Herndon.
Okay.
If something is presumptively virtual, let's say, I don't know how every other court is set up, but if I'm holding court in my courtroom, even though I have the virtual option up, any attorney can walk into the courtroom and appear personally. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Yeah. So let's say you have presumptively virtual, and we're in civil, since we're in the civil side of things right now, and it is a,
A law in motion.
yeah, just a motion in limine, right? Just a generic motion in limine on the law in motion calendar that's presumptively virtual, and a particular attorney says, "Yeah, I feel like going to court." Right. I like being in court. I like arguing to the judge and kind of interacting that way. Absolutely. And I don't think, and there's nothing in our rules that should require that person to notify everybody that they're going to show up in court. It's really
Right.
when something's presumptively in person and you want to now change it to say, I want to appear remotely. I don't want to be there. I can't be there, whatever it may be. That's part of the reason why one of the big caveats to this whole thing is to recommend that judges should always be present in the courtroom, because the parties and the public always have the right to appear in person if they want to, regardless of the presumptions. Now, can judges always be in court? No, I don't think that's any different than the way we did business before the pandemic. There may be situations where a judge can't appear in the courtroom, but still wants to hear his or her calendar. Obviously, we have the technology to figure that out. We just don't want judges saying, well, we have technology now, so I'm going to stay home for 3 months just because I feel like doing that, right? If a judge says, I've got a health issue or, other things going on within my family, whatever it may be, that's obviously a good cause exception as to why a judge may not be present in the courtroom, even for an extended period of time, but still want to handle their calendar instead of having a senior judge do it.
Well, and I was a little bit of a disadvantage. Most of what I could glean from the prior minutes, my first appearance on this subcommittee was our last subcommittee meeting. And so Judge Clark Newberry has a lot more historical knowledge. And just like these settlement conferences, they're both presumptive in person or virtual. There wasn't really a preference there. And the same thing with several of these other categories. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit at a loss. Settlement conferences, I do understand because of the Supreme Court settlement program. We've got judges doing those in person. They prefer to do them in person, and others do it virtually. And you actually, they're more effective as far as getting beyond impasse in a lot of cases, because the adjusters may be on the East Coast, and you take that away. And sometimes they're appearing telephonically. It just doesn't work. And so you have the virtual option. That's create a lot more opportunities for settling these cases. And a lot of judges really prefer to have them all in person. And I don't know how you take away that option and create a presumptive in person, because I know my judges that are doing the Supreme Court settlements are very effective with the virtual process. So that's a touchy one.
This is
Go
Judge
ahead,
Clark
Darren.
Newberry. I think our committee
Whoop,
takes
you're cutting out there.
sorry. I think, there's on the subcommittee we really discussed the fact that it's hard to come with a presumption on settlement conferences. For an example that you just stated, Justice Perjury, is that there are certain types of cases where you would presumably want the insurance carrier on a virtual option because they have access to their equipment, communications potentially within their insurance company, and things that they can do remotely that they cannot do in person. But now that everyone's working remotely, one of the arguments that was raised was, well, what stops them from bringing that technology with them to the courthouse? And so it really is a case-by-case thing. And I don't know, and that's why I think both boxes were checked, is that on that category, we couldn't reach an agreement on what should be the presumption because there's a lot of variables. And there are some judicial preferences, but also judicial effectiveness. I think us as jurists, some of us are very effective virtually in conducting settlement conferences, and there's other jurists that struggle with it, and they're more successful in person. And so I think that's one category where perhaps it does need to remain, I don't know, very, very loose as far as what is expected, but it might at least provide the guidelines for the process of whether it's going to be virtual or not. And then the same thing with regards to status conferences and trial readiness. The majority of civil cases, I think, virtual is preferred, but there are some situations, such as in some of the business court cases, where they might have very long pretrial conferences because there's a lot of issues and virtual becomes tenuous and difficult to maintain. Or in the situation that we were running into on a few of the business court cases is we ran out of room on BlueJeans because of the amount of people that logged in all at the same time for a case, including all of their clients, and it crashed. So that, but again, I echo what was discussed earlier as to criminal is having the off ramps, I think, allows for those circumstances to be taken into consideration in the discretion of the judge. And I think having a uniformity of the rules, but with that softened language that allows for those differences, I think that's exactly the same thing that civil came up with. Although I would say civil has more presumptive virtual appearances. And that really was driven by what the practitioners reported. Other than trial and evidentiary hearings, the vast majority of civil practitioners prefer to appear remotely.
I think what you're talking about, Tara, with the settlement conferences is similar to what Melissa was talking about in terms of there may be particular case types. Like if Judge Denton says, I can't do presumptive virtual trial readiness conferences in my business court cases, right? I got to get those people in here
right, in
person. That's a good cause thing where he can justify that. And I'm guessing the bar would probably prefer that as well on that type of a case. And we all know how it goes. If you have a business court case and there are 10 attorneys involved and seven people say, I'm showing up in person, the other three are not going to say, I want to be virtual. They're going to be like, I want to be in the courtroom as well. Patty's nodding her head, right? Nobody wants to be the guy on blue jeans while everybody else is getting FaceTime in the courtroom with each other and the judge trying to figure out all the issues. So I agree. My personal view of this is that the status conferences trial readiness should be presumptively virtual, understanding, like we just said, that the judge, hey, in a particular case could say, we're going to do these in person because I need to do them in person. And I would also say that my sense is on dispositive motion hearings and settlement conferences that those should be presumptively virtual. I can't imagine, and I'm sure you guys are going to anecdotally tell me that I'm wrong, but I can't imagine that if you set a settlement conference presumptively virtual and the attorneys say, my insurance adjuster would like to appear virtually, can we do that? Are we really going to have, if everybody else is in court, are there judges that are going to say, nope?
Wait, say that again, Doug. I didn't quite
like catch what that. I'm talking about, like a settlement conference, a civil settlement conference, where the attorneys, let's say it's a personal injury case, the attorneys, the plaintiff, they're all going to be in court, but they ask to have an insurance adjuster appear virtually from their office. Are there district court
judges? It depends on the settlement judge, quite frankly. I mean, I've had some judges be very, very insistent really? That the carrier fly in and be there in person. Okay. And others, they say, so long as everybody agrees, that the person with settlement authority is going to be available throughout the entirety of the conference remotely, I'm fine with it. So it does vary. I mean, I don't know if those breed of judges are, you know, I think they're kind of slowly either changing their positions or dying out based on what happened with the pandemic. But I have had settlement judges who mandate that everybody be there or else the settlement conference could not go forward. But more often than not, they're pretty accommodating.
Okay.
And I agree with Justice Lee. I think that is, there are still people I know in the eighth who would demand that like everybody show up in person or everybody be remote and that there can't be like a hybrid situation where some people are there and some people are not.
So if some people want to appear in person, the judge would say, nope. The other people want to appear remotely, and I'm not letting one person in and one person be remote.
It's possible.
I've not encountered that. It's usually. Sorry, go ahead. I apologize.
I'm sorry. It's hard being on the phone. Judge Clark Newbery, I think that's all the more reason we need a presumption, because if there's a presumption that it's virtual, and then for whatever reason there's a unique circumstance where a judge prefers that they come in person, it gives guidance that you have to be reasonable and there has to be reasons for why you're deviating from the presumption.
Yeah, we encountered
the settlements. The same. I'm just not, again, I think it's so individual to the judge conducting the settlement conference. Some of them are far, far more effective in person than virtually. There's a lot of dynamics that go into a settlement conference.
So,
and even with our settlement judges, you know, our senior judges that do settlement conferences, there's some that are very effective in person that aren't necessarily effective doing it virtually. And that's kind of the sense with the Supreme Court settlement judges as well.
Why, if you recall, Tara, was there a presumptively in person for mediation in the civil subcommittee? And then we viewed settlement conferences differently.
I think it really came down to the vote that who marked where. And so I think what if I recall, and anyone else on the committee, correct me if I'm wrong, Justice Hardesty had us fill these all out and then tabulated. And so essentially the ones that are double marked, there was a tie.
Okay.
You know, on settlement conferences, I think I'd almost prefer that the presumption, if we're gonna actually create a presumption, that those be in person, unless the judge wants to.
But it sounds like your preference is maybe just to leave that as judicial discretion.
Yeah,
That's what we did on the family one. We couldn't decide either on settlement conferences. I think it's just too hard to create a presumption one way or the other. So we just left it up to judicial discretion.
So we just keep the double indication, presumptive in person or presumptive virtual.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to, we just wrote in judicial preference in our box for settlement, but pretty much means the same thing.
Okay. Yeah.
We couldn't reach a consensus one way or the other. Okay. So I like all my settlement conferences.
Not everybody can be the criminal subcommittee where we talk through all our issues and come to consensus.
I would suggest, Justice Herndon, putting NA in the presumptive in person, NA in presumptive virtual, if we're producing this as a table. And then that way it would show there is no presumption. And then the exceptions comments that it's a judicial discretion as to whether or not it'll be virtual or in person, and you'll have, and that will make it very clear that there is no presumption.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that.
What about dispositive motions?
I always liked having my dispositive motions. When I did my motion calendar, because they were so big, I had all those cases that were presumed to be chamber cases that weren't hearings unless otherwise requested. And there were only a handful that we had arguments on, dispositive motions. I think there were five categories that we had hearings on. And I think the other ones we did chamber's calendar unless there was a request otherwise. But I always did dispositive motions in person. I think it's the attorney's opportunity also to educate the judge on their cases.
Well, I think being in
court and being able to do that in court, it's been a long time since I've been in district court, but that's something I always preferred.
It's been a spell, hasn't it?
It's been a little spell.
So, Tara, I take this one was another one that was just a tie?
A tie amongst the judges. The practitioners prefer virtual based on their survey.
Right.
With the option, however, and the understanding that they can choose to come in person if they want to. And I think the rationale behind that was that the presumption is that it's in virtual, so that no one has to provide notice. No one has to go to any extraneous lengths to have it appear virtually. And most civil calendars are going to have a virtual component to it because you're going to have an intermix of status checks, pretrial conferences, 16 conferences, and dispositive motions. So the virtual is going to be happening. And so I think the rationale is simply that presumptively virtual, but if you want to come in person, nothing stops you from doing that. The only question became, does anyone have to provide the notice? And I think one of the things we discussed early on was avoiding this aspect of notice, because it right. clogs the courts. When we're having 40 or 50 matters heard in a day and having to get 15 or 20 notices of electronic appeal, and it doesn't really serve a purpose, because if someone's going to appear in person, they're going to appear in person. If they're going to appear virtually, they're going to appear virtually. I don't see too many attorneys making their decision based on what their opponent is going to do, but more so what they're going to do or their own logistics. If they're already in the courthouse for okay. an evidentiary or, hearing, they're just going to go to everything.
We need a rebound. Patty, you need to get off your cell phone, so go ahead.
So that was the tie. That was a tie in our subcommittee, was exactly what Justice Perigary was saying. There are some judges that would prefer to have everyone appear in person, and I understand that. But I also understand from a practitioner's standpoint, they've got a motion in federal court, they have a motion in Reno, they have a motion in 8th Judicial District Court. It's much easier for them to navigate their schedule being able to appear remotely, even on a motion for summary judgment.
Well, you know, that brings up the question that they've indicated on this presumption list, dispositive motions. Why don't you just make all motions?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It would just fall under law and motion generally then.
Right.
I mean, discovery motions would still be different because that's happened in the discovery commissioner. But dispositive motions, I think, would just be
part of motions.
Motion calendar.
It's your law and motion calendar, yeah.
How's but that? Of course, discovery motions at the justice court level are far different because we don't have a discovery commissioner, and we have certain, you know, discovery that's authorized when you have counsel on both sides. But if you've got a pro per litigant, you know, they're just a little bit different.
So maybe we can talk about that. This is Patty. When we reconvene the limited jurisdictions subcommittee.
Tara, is there any reason to have dispositive motions as its own separate category if we're doing presumptively virtual?
The only reason it was separated was because of the lack of agreement on which types of motions should be presumed virtual. Okay. So I think if we're going with dispositive motions as virtual, then it makes sense that all types of hearings would be virtual. And I do know from the discovery commissioners in the 8th, they prefer virtual. They don't have an issue with it. They've been doing that right. since the pandemic and have continued to do that. So I know that that's their preference in the 8th, but also keep in mind, business court judges maintain their own discovery in the 8th, and all the other jurisdictions, most of the other jurisdictions don't have discovery commissioners.
So let's Jamie, let's take out that motion hearings row, and let's also the next row on discovery motions insert commissioner in there so that it's clear that those are discovery commissioner motions. And
okay.
Then we'll just leave law and motion generally as presumptively virtual.
Okay.
All right. So let's see here. The only other question that I had on the civil side was mediation. Do we really have the ability to dictate presumptions for mediation that's kind of occurring outside of the court?
Yeah, I don't know how that came about. And I didn't see much in the prior minutes.
I mean, we say presumptively in person, but we can't really tell.
Neighborhood justice,
Nottie, how
for
she
example.
Has to mediation, right?
I don't know the context.
I do these virtually, right? And the attorneys are saying, well, the court said this is presumptively in person. And I don't think
this,
she's.
Yeah, this is Judge Clark Neuber. If it was based on the survey that was provided to the practitioners, this is something that came feedback that came back from them. But okay. I would agree. I think if we weigh in on it, it could carry over into the private mediation, and I think that would be problematic.
Okay, yeah, so let's take that one out as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, we do a lot of mediations at the justice court level down here with the Neighborhood Justice Center, and it kind of just depends upon their technology,
right, how they want to do things. Okay.
Okay, just take it out entirely then.
Okay.
All right, let's flip over to the family stuff.
Justice Herndon?
Yep.
This is Leslie Nina Pirro. Before we leave this section, I was, if I could go back to settlement conferences for just a second, since that section at the end says exceptions and comments, I was wondering if we might be able to, at least if we're not going to give any presumption and just say NA, if we might want to provide a comment saying like strongly favoring virtual appearances for adjusters or just persons with settlement authority, like speaking on behalf of the person with settlement authority, i.e. me, for the state. It sometimes requires either myself or the tort claims manager to be in many places on the same day or week, and that can be real sticky at times, and so it would be appreciated. Sometimes it doesn't cause any problems, but sometimes it can. So at least if there was a like a suggestion, like, hey, please allow us
that's
to appear virtually,
comfortably in person, right? Because I think that's what, when we say something is presumptively one or the other, that is our comment about what is preferred. Which is why I was very reticent about having things where we don't make a recommendation and just say, judge, do what you want to do. I don't know. Paige had her hand up as well.
Justice Herndon, what if, because this would apply for family too, but also for civil on settlement conferences, instead of saying judge's discretion, because I know practitioners will probably be thinking, well, how will we know? When are we going to know? Saying in the comments, if we're going to put NA in each presumption box, saying to be determined at the time of setting, or to be determined by the judicial officer at the time of setting with input from the parties. So there's a little bit more explanation of like, how are we going to know? How is it going to be determined? Because I think every judge would want input from the parties on that. I know when we're setting settlement conferences, you know, I'm interested to know what the parties want to do. And generally there's an agreement. And if there's not, then the judge will make the decision for whatever, you know, make a good cause decision one way or the other.
I think that's a really good point. I like it.
Okay.
So are
the exceptions put something in there that incorporates Leslie's concern about there is a preference for in-person appearance at settlement conferences, but the judicial officer will decide the parameters of appearances at the time the settlement conference is set after taking input from the parties. Yeah.
Are the exceptions and comments on here, I kind of thought those were just by the way they were written because they're a little informal. I thought they were just kind of for our purposes of discussion, but are they going to actually be put out when these rules are published?
So in my mind, that's exactly why they were there. For us, as we're discussing things, trying to figure out why we were making a particular recommendation or not. Some of the things, for instance, you know, and look, I was a criminal subcommittee, so I can just tell you where we have things in there about, hey, there needs to be a virtual option for families of defendants and victims to be able to appear. I don't intend for that to be a recommendation. That's really more just a, might be something we include somewhere in that preamble language about now that the courts have virtual technology, they need to have that option available to the public to appear and watch court proceedings kind of thing.
I think you can just footnote the recommendations to add a little comment.
But I didn't intend on these exception comments columns to be included in what we're, you know, sending out as our proposal.
Right.
And Justice Herndon, you just brought up a good point that just put a pin in it for when we get there, spectators. Because there's a lot of discussion about what's allowed and what's not allowed for spectators. And we've had some instances with perhaps a judge who's no longer on the bench where they refused access to media who wanted to appear through the Blue Jeans link and watch a proceeding. And they were shut out intentionally by the clerk. There's some stuff I think we just want to put a pin in it to discuss spectator ability to watch a proceeding virtually. And that's the same as like a family member who just wants to watch the proceeding, but they're not a witness. They're not a litigant. They're not a party. They're not an attorney. Probably something that needs to be in the preamble somewhere.
Yeah, remember the old days where you're a young attorney and there was no cell phones or anything. Well, not all of us remember this, but I do, back when I had hair. There were people that would just go around to courts and watch trials and watch court proceedings, right? They were retired. They would just show up and, hey, it was kind of interesting to see what was going on. That kind of faded away over the years. But my sense is with the ability to virtually watch things, there's probably people that would want in, you know, hop on and watch Thomas Randolph's trial just because I got nothing else going on. It's in the newspaper every day. Hey, I wonder if there's a way to go on and watch this kind of thing, right? Just like people that watch the court TV proceedings or whatever when they were live streaming trials, you know, back in the day, that type of thing. We do need, I think, to have that mechanism available to people. And that's part of the reason we have some of those preamble rules in there about screen names and what you do when you're appearing virtually, that kind of stuff. Now, can't expect the attorneys or anybody else really to be able to control a random member of the public that wants to get online. But you're right. I think that the media, assuming they filed a request to, you know, well, actually, I don't think they need to file a request if they just want to hop on Blue Jeans and watch a court proceeding.
Correct. Yeah, it would just be if they want to record it or, right, you know, video it or something like that. And that's been the big discussion is, well, how do we prevent somebody who's just randomly appearing? I go, well, if they walked into the courtroom and sat down, you don't control what they do. I mean, now, yes, they can't have their cell phone out. They can't be recording.
Right.
But the fear is, well, we can't see what they're doing on the other end, so we don't know. And it's a public proceeding. So to me, anybody should be able to log in and just watch a public proceeding.
For sure.
But there are some hesitation by others who are very concerned about not being able to control what that person does when they get on. So,
like what?
Like they're going to record it on their phone. I'm going to, you know, put my phone up and record the proceeding. Like, well, yeah, they're not supposed to do that, but.
Well, and if you that's happened, there's a way to deal with that, right? And do an order to show cause or something. But we don't close the courts because of fear of what somebody may do, right? I mean, that's just one of those things that you're reactive to, not prospectively, you know, eliminating the public's, you know, right to go online and see what's going on. I think we got rid of that when Doug Smith retired, right?
Well, there is actually something in the preamble under Let's see, it's under subsection 2. It's actually part of the rules, attendance, and it's 2D. Members of the public, including friends or family who wish to attend a virtual hearing, are to make a request directly to the appropriate court as outlined in the court's applicable procedures.
So, but do they have to make a request?
I think to get the link, which, right?
Yeah, I don't know that any court system is set up right now where you can just go on the court's website and there's a link to go to Department 10 and watch all their court proceedings.
Yeah, you can. In ours, in Blue Jeans, they've published them all on our main website with their static, numbers, like the meeting ID or whatever. It's just a static. So mine is the same every single day for anybody.
They can click on that and go watch your Law in Motion calendar.
They'd have to still type it into Zoom or Blue Jeans or whatever. They can't click a link, but it's accessible to everybody.
Paige, and ours the same way.
Ours is the same way. My meeting ID for my Blue Jeans is the exact same every Monday and Wednesday. So like if you had a case this week, Monday, you can log in a month and watch my Monday, Wednesday calendar. And like I actually give it out to jurors if they want to tune into sentencing, but it is direct now. And it's the same thing every day. All of the district court departments are the same.
Okay. Well, and I think, Doug, I think
we don't need that.
Justice Lee had made a recommendation. I don't have her recommendations in front of me. They're here somewhere, but there's a recommendation as part of her edits to the preamble. I thought that addressed providing a link for members of the public.
Yeah, this is like Jonathan.
That's being done though. And Paige, where you had your hand up, were you saying Washoe does that as well?
We do, unless Alicia's, I know Alicia's here too. She can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that on our Washoe Courts website, for any hearings that are open, there are links for the various judicial departments. The other comment I had was for anyone that wants to log on and watch a proceeding, do we want to maybe look at adding anything to the language about, you know, like decorum in the courtroom? There's that expectation, just like if somebody's in person in my courtroom acting unruly, I can tell that person to leave. They were acting that way virtually, I could remove them. And also, do we want to have a requirement that a member of the public watching a proceeding virtually must have their video on or not?
So I think that we do have language in here about conduct at hearings, that proper courtroom attire is required for parties, counsel, or witnesses. I don't know that how far we can look. Members of the public aren't going to be reading our preamble and all of that. They're just going on to watch a proceeding. So I don't know that other than making sure that attorneys are talking to their clients and family members or et cetera that are going to be appearing about what would be expected of them. I don't know that other than the court's websites providing those links and maybe saying if you appear, and that would be up to you all as a court system, if you're going to appear virtually and watch court proceedings, you'll be expected to conduct yourself in a professional manner. If not, the court has the ability to, you know, cut you off from whatever. But I don't know that putting it in here is really necessary because it's not, nobody's going to know about it. Does that make sense?
Justice Herndon, there was a discussion as to this, and I think there's two options. One is in the chat feature at the beginning of every proceeding, you have just a general blanket statement that you post into the chat that says anyone, you know, disrupting the proceedings. It's no different than the notices we have outside of our courtrooms that say, if you misbehave, you don't follow the rules, you're out.
Right.
Or the judge just simply making those findings on the record and say, telephone number or whatever the screen name is, you're disrupting the proceedings and therefore you'll be dropped from the call, and you drop them and you move on.
Okay. Hey, Lori, what about like in Fernley? Do you all have anything in the justice court out there that's a link for people to go on and watch proceedings?
I do not have a link that they can automatically go to. They usually call the court. We then provide them the link, and we don't live stream it. Okay. So they'll call and say that they're interested in watching the proceeding, and we give them the link. I've had press appear and victims appear and just spectators.
Okay.
I would prefer them not to have to make a request. That, you know, I mean, it sounds so formal, you know, I mean, I don't care if they call to find out what the link is, but like to make it as if they have to request the court and the court needs to make some ruling on it would be overly cumbersome.
Well, what about contact the department to get the link unless the link is